State of the Empire is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse, and is brought to you in part by Consequence of Sound, the web's foremost source of music and film news, reviews, and insights. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com. Welcome to State of the Empire, Nerdy Show's Star Wars speculation podcast, where we look for news in Alderaan places. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
Hey, I'm Matt.
Guys, we're doing something weird here. We're going to be doing two episodes of State of the Empire back to back. One is this program, where we're talking about all the news since our last episode about Rogue One, mostly about Rogue One, and then also Star Wars Rebels Season 3. And then, between now and next week, we got Rogue Friday, the launch of all the Rogue One merchandise, and we're going to be doing an episode next week as well. So stay tuned for back-to-back episodes of State of the Empire. You're not seeing double. Now, if this is your first time with State of the Empire, well, we know that there's a lot of sensitive information out there, especially as new films approach their release. So don't worry. That's why we have the blast doors. That's a point in the show where we're going to say, hey, we're going to talk about some serious spoilers right now, so we'll see you later. Maybe you can come back to the episode after the movie's out, if that's your jam, or, just check out all the news and stuff that's coming out in front of the blast doors. Either way, you can listen to State of the Empire and still play it safe.
The safe word is open the blast doors. when you hear us say we're going to open the blast doors, that's when you can check out if you want to avoid the spoilers.
How many people, how many do you think stay, like, leave when the blast doors open?
I know a few people who listen to the show who say that they do check out at that point. So more than a handful.
I would not be able to resist myself. I think that the juiciest bits. I mean, there's some pretty, like, good juice going on beforehand, but then we get real good juice.
Don't tempt the people who don't want to hear it. I'm going to ruin it for them.
No, they like it. It's like smoking a death stick.
Exactly. It's a little Sith manipulation going on here. Like,
yeah, Matt will be playing.
Yeah, when Palpatine, like, pats the lightsaber, like,
oh, you want this, don't you?
Like, that's essentially that's the spoiler. That's what we're saying. It's like, you want the spoiler.
Take your spoiler weapon and strike me down.
The voice of the Sith holocron today will be played by Matt Spill. So let's talk about Rebels without spoiling the episode. In brief, we can mention our reactions to the debut of Season 3, the premiere of Season 3. And then also we have some pretty interesting news regarding the production team of Rebels. So first reactions to the Star Wars Rebels, and not a spoiler because everybody knows it, the first canonical appearance of Grand Admiral Thrawn in the new universe.
Pretty good.
He's real. Yeah. Like, minimal, but, you know, definitely had a presence.
It's just the start of the season, so I'm expecting him a lot more.
Yeah, I think eventually we're going to get an episode that's really, like, gives us, you know, that was a good way to set him up, was sort of like, oh, there's something special about this guy, but for people that don't know him that well, like, you know, that's all they got. And then I think later on we'll get sort of a, oh, that's what the big deal is about this guy.
If you yourself are drawing a blank, Grand Admiral Thrawn is like the MVP character of the Star Wars Expanded Universe. His entire continuity's been erased, but now it's getting rebuilt, and it's very exciting. In fact, there's a clip floating around of what I guess is the next episode of Rebels, where it's a clip called Hearts and Minds, or at least that was the article it was attached to, where we see Thrawn, the Rebels come face to face with Thrawn while pretending to be Imperial employees, and potentially something very bad is about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that seems to be a tactic that particular group of Rebels has used quite a bit over the course of the series, and I like that it looks like he's already snuffed that out. It's like, oh, those things that have been working for you for two seasons, not anymore, because I'm fucking Thrawn.
Yeah, there was a long, long interview with Dave Filoni that came out recently, where he talked about how this season of Rebels is he suspects where most people thought Rebels was going to start in terms of the state of the rebellion.
Hmm.
Because we were all, I think, mutually surprised in the first season of Rebels when it was like a ragtag group of people seemingly with no major connections whatsoever, just kind of making stuff explode sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like a Splinter Cell kind of thing.
Yeah.
But and now it's becoming a true rebellion.
And yeah, true alliance of Rebels.
Yeah.
Yes. And Thrawn knows that. And all the other Imperials seem... it's interesting how much they don't want to believe that the Rebels are as organized as they are.
It kind of creates a very interesting sort of like... maybe not intentional, but like the sort of... you know, you never want to... you hope when you're fighting like a small splinter group or a Rebel group that it always seems to be that the power in place... always wants you to make it, they're just disorganized. You know, like you kind of say that about like maybe the ISIS fighters or something like that. You know, they got to get some similarities in the whole like when the threat becomes real is when it's like, oh, they're talking to each other. Gotcha. You know, so it's kind of interesting that the Empire is sort of taking that approach too. It's like, well, let's not let the public know that they actually do talk to each other.
Yeah. And Thrawn is the only one who actually seems to grasp like, no, these people are real, and he goes out of his way to make sure that he's clearly from his first appearance playing a long game, figuring out how he can not just win small victories against the Rebels, but really destroy any hope that there could be a future rebellion.
Yeah, that is, I mean, they're ripping. I mean, that's Thrawn's cunning from, you know, old Thrawn from, you know, the mid 90s when he first made his EU appearances. Like, he's always playing the long game. You know, he will sacrifice the pawn in order to get his bigger men in place.
There was a line about how he like destroyed a system to cull some insurgency, and there were like severe civilian casualties, but it was okay because they were within a margin of acceptability.
Because the Rebels,
which, I don't know what, that margin is.
It's like, we're willing to accept 500 civilian deaths per Rebel killed. Is kind of like what it sounded like.
Nope.
The other big changes is that from right off the bat, Ezra has a new shitty haircut, and and he's tall. He's maybe even taller than Sabine right now.
Yeah, he is.
He had a legitimate teenage growth spurt, and he gets appointed as like lieutenant commander. They're letting him make decisions, and he's also sipping some of the Sith Kool-Aid pretty hard from the holocron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was surprised halfway through the episode, without spoiling things, I was just like, yeah, he's going pretty dark side. Ezra's got one foot in the door, you know, propping it open, letting the dark side in. And even by the end of the episode, I'm like, he didn't really, you know, close the book on that. It was really like, there's still a lot of potential for bad stuff to happen.
Well, one of the clips that was circulated before the series premiere was Tom Baker's new character, Bendu, some kind of force-sensitive alien living in the wastelands of the planet the Rebels are hiding out on. And he speaks about, you know, the Jedi and the Sith are polarizing, and it seems like harmony exists in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a message that's been spread from The Force Awakens onward, that there is a gray area, and maybe there's a reason that the Jedi and the Sith have been waging war for thousands of years, and it's because neither of them searches for harmony. The prophecy was that Skywalker would bring balance to the Force, but there is no balance in Sith and Jedi.
Right. They're just two extremes.
Yeah, and even the Jedi did not themselves realize that the balance did not involve them.
Right.
And I think that might be a larger meta-narrative that's being spread across the Star Wars universe at this point.
Which I really dig. I mean, the Jedi are cool and all, but I do like the idea of sort of going back to Darth Revan's philosophy, you know, of neither light nor dark. There is a harmony balance within. Like, it's better to have, you have to acknowledge that both is within you if you're going to actually grow. Otherwise, you're going to fall to the extremes.
Yeah, this season premiere, Steps in a Shadow, was not bad by any means. It was quite good, but it was nowhere near the showstopper Empire Strikes Back quality season premiere of season 2.
Yeah, I thought this premiere was a lot more thought-provoking, or I don't know if that's the right word, but certainly it had me thinking a lot more than looking forward to the action like if the season 2 premiere did. This was much more about like watching Ezra grow, and not necessarily all the right ways, certainly very few right ways, it seems. I mean, but he's definitely a very powerful, gifted Jedi at this point. And that was really cool to see. But at the same time, the way he was bringing in those Sith holocron teachings. And by the way, I had just finished my binge watch of seasons 1 and 2 before starting this episode. And this episode actually makes a very good transition from the finale of season 2. Like, it flows very well thematically and also just tone.
It just felt like the next episode. It was what I would have wanted to watch immediately after the finale.
Yes.
I also felt that although it wasn't as, like you say, it wasn't as blockbustery showstopper as season 2's premiere, I felt that there was a lot more care given to story, you know, planting these story seeds for like future payoffs. Like, there's a lot going on. Like, season 2's premiere with Vader and everything was very much more about an external conflict and like the immediate survival and the goal at that point. Now it's way more like, whoa, where is everybody emotionally and where are they going? Like, these characters have taken a hard right turn after the end of season 2, and this is catching up with where they are and what their trajectory is going to be for the rest of the season.
Now, we're gonna talk plenty more about Rebels on the other side of the blast doors. That's about as much as we could say without spoiling the experience, or what's to come, for that matter. But here's the weird big news that broke over the weekend. Justin Ridge is replacing Dave Filoni as supervising director of Rebels.
So now, does this mean Dave Filoni is stepping away entirely, or just he's sort of shrinking to like maybe a producer or something like that?
He's still executive producer. Mm-hmm. He's still very much, he's probably working in the same studio. And Justin Ridge is a longtime collaborator. He worked as an episodic director on Clone Wars and Rebels. He's been there since day one. But Filoni, they haven't announced anything yet, but I think it was either the last episode or the episode before of our show, State of the Empire, we've been hearing murmurs about another Star Wars animated series.
Right.
We don't know anything about it.
Well, and we know when we were at Star Wars Celebration, Dave Filoni said that he had a couple other ideas for other shows that he was pitched really hard to get.
Yeah.
So I hope some of those come to fruition.
Yeah. And now would be an okay time to talk about what those were. But I guess the point is that Filoni is definitively working on another project right now. Mm-hmm. And there's actually an official statement from Lucasfilm about it. This is recently. Dave is still just as involved as ever, overseeing all aspects of Star Wars Rebels production as executive producer and occasionally directing episodes. In many ways, mentoring Justin and moving him into the role of supervising director has made it possible for Dave to be even more immersed in the writing and story structure of the show, as well as creatively overseeing future animation development. Justin started with Lucasfilm Animation on the first season of Star Wars The Clone Wars and worked with Dave before that on Avatar The Last Airbender, so they've been working together for quite some time. What do we think is next?
I can tell you what I hope is next.
I want to hear that. What do you hope?
The pitch that Dave Filoni gave at Celebration for a Top Gun fighter school for the TIE fighters.
Okay. I'd be willing to accept this.
Yeah, Imperial Top Gun is like how he basically pitched it.
And it's interesting because we have to assume that like Rebels is tying into it's the transition, the baton pass between the prequel era and then this revival of the original trilogy era, which we're also seeing in terms of Rogue One. So are we going to see a show that's reflecting the new trilogy, or are we going to find a show that also reflects this original trilogy era that is most definitely the number one cash cow of the Star Wars enterprise? My bet, however, would be that it would have something to do with the new films. In fact, Dave Filoni visited the set of Episode 8 not too long ago. That could mean nothing. I mean, he's a well-known entity in the Lucasfilm world, so him being able to walk on set for Episode 8 and just pal around and take some publicity shots, not too weird. But I think it would make sense for there to be something as the mystery kind of gets lifted about the status quo of the Star Wars universe in the era of the new trilogy, that it would make sense for there to be something in there. Maybe it's a First Order TIE Fighter school.
Maybe.
Huh. I don't know. They seem to be, despite the new trilogy being, or certainly Episode 7 being as successful as it was, they still seem to be pretty, like, entrenched in everything else exploiting that era. Like, I believe, the Battlefront game was only of that era. The Visceral Studios game is probably going to be original trilogy era.
Probably.
I don't know if that's been confirmed or not, but it certainly looked that way.
Yeah.
Well, and if this new show took place in the same era as Rebels, there's easy potential for crossover stuff, like even using the same art assets. Like, you know, they wouldn't have to remodel TIE fighters or characters even if it was of a similar style and it took place in the, you know, similar visual universe.
I think we're just going to end up with, like, the Deep Space Nine to Rebels next generation.
I was kind of going in that direction. I was thinking about saying something like that. Cause
like, kind of overlapping, but on its own, takes from the same thing, while, like, you could then consider Clone Wars to be, like, the original series.
I mean, I sure as hell wouldn't mind that. I mean, a successful dichotomy between two shows happening in tandem, it can be great. It can be much like how they have those Imperial Academy books, I forget what they're actually called, there's a series of young adult novels that are a spinoff of Rebels and work within that continuity presently.
Oh, yeah, the Servants of the Empire novels. Those were a lot of fun. Yeah, those were great and very interesting to read the Imperial, like, the perspective of someone who discovers the corruption of the Empire from within the system, as opposed to being able to see everything externally from the beginning.
Hey, is that series done?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. We know that the Rebels timeline is a very big place, so we'll see. We'll see when they choose to reveal the information of what comes next. There's a lot of new things that are going to be revealed soon, and the question is it going to happen randomly, or is it going to be tied to events like Comic Cons or Disney conventions, Star Wars Celebration, etc.? When are they going to wait to unveil all this? But certainly the Star Wars Celebration in Orlando coming this spring in 2017 will be a hotbed of information. It's the right time to discover things like, what is that movie coming out in 2020? And what is the next animated Star Wars project?
See, and my blood pressure goes up thinking about how awesome that could be. But then I'm like, are they just going to give us Episode 8? Because, you know, that would be like right around the corner from there. And then it's like the return of Luke Skywalker. How could you ever be bigger than that? So I don't know if like how much other stuff we get.
Well, I mean, announcements do not constitute, let's say, enough information to really harm the promotion cycle for Episode 8, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, look at how much information we got about The Force Awakens when we went to Celebration. You know,
very little.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was still hyped up. It was still, like, crazy stuff. So I'm sure we're going to get a new trailer, and I'd put money on them revealing what the next film is going to be, much like how they gave details about Rogue One. I mean, before Celebration, we knew very little about Rogue One. We knew, like, almost nothing. Like, we had the title, and we were pretty sure we knew what the story was, but we didn't have any facts, you know. And then when Gareth Edwards comes out and he tells everybody everything, well, not everything, but he explains a whole bunch, and we get the teaser images, concept art, and then the short little teaser itself. And so I'm expecting something similar.
But one way or another, we're going to be there. So if you're going to be there too, you should let us know. Now, let's move on to Rogue One. Hopefully, we're going to have a lot more to say about Rogue One in next week's episode. But maybe we won't have so much to say, because there's been a surprising amount of leaks already of merchandise. And granted, we still know only the broadest of strokes about the plot structure of this film, but we do have a lot of more kind of fun nuggets of information that are 100% safe for non-Blastor consumption. First of all, since our last episode, the international trailer came out, and if you haven't seen it, you should totally check it out, because it is, not surprisingly, as they always are, better than the American trailer. A recent piece of news, which is very weird, I think, is that Michael Giacchino is going to replace Alexandra Desplat, whose name I probably really fucked up there, as the composer of the film. Desplat was... He was composer of Rogue One, but according to Hollywood Reporter, the reshoots for Rogue One altered the scoring calendar, so he's no longer available. So Michael Giacchino has stepped in.
Which is, you know, I don't know what the other guy has done before. I'm not as familiar, but Michael Giacchino, I was a fan of Michael Giacchino way back from when he did the music. I don't know if I ever talked about this on State of the Empire before, but the first time I got familiar with him was when I was playing the PlayStation 1 video game for The Lost World, for the Jurassic Park sequel. And I remember hearing the music and thinking, this sounds a lot like John Williams. Did they get John Williams to do this? Like, this doesn't make sense. I have the soundtrack to The Lost World, and this is none of that. So I beat the game, watched the credits, and it was like, Michael Giacchino, who the hell is that? Whatever. Then Medal of Honor came out, and I'm like, this sounds a lot like John Williams. And it's like music by Michael Giacchino. I'm like, who is this guy, and why does he sound so much like John Williams? And, you know, time goes on, and then he starts making movies, and I'm like, oh, man, look, it's Michael Giacchino. I know. Like, no one else knew who this guy was, but I knew who he was. And then he did Star Trek, and I was just like, I already know him by now, you know. oh, Mike? Yeah, I know Mike. Like, it was whatever. So I have complete faith in him as a composer. I mean, even when he's not channeling directly John Williams. When he was channeling John Williams, it sounded a hell of a lot like John Williams. But I'm curious to see how much of it's going to sound like that.
Yeah, now he's going to seriously channel John Williams.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be like, for real this time.
Doug, I don't know. Did you see that about the Lost World N64 game in relation to Jurassic World?
No, not at all. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know how true it is. According to some people on Reddit, Giacchino, he referenced his Lost World music in his Jurassic World score.
Interesting.
I don't know that. See, I've only ever read that on Reddit, so I don't know how true that is.
If you could link me to it, I could tell you, because I was pretty familiar with the score because I loved it when I was playing the game.
The suggestion from Reddit was that he should probably quote the Rogue Squadron soundtrack for Rogue One.
Well, I mean,
so if he does that, I mean, he's totally got my vote. Much more looking forward to Alexander Desplat doing the music, but if that's the case, like, he's definitely a referential type of composer.
Right.
Like,
well, did he do the music for Rogue Squadron?
No, he didn't.
Okay, well, then why would he reference that? He did the music. Literally, he did the music for the Lost World video game.
Well,
he wrote
it. But I think he can acknowledge that, like, he can go to certainly a video game source. I mean, it may have
been. It's not a video game source. It's his source. He wrote it. That's like.
I know. But I'm just saying, like, you know, I don't think it could hurt if he's looking for a theme for this, you know, group of rogues, you know, for him to go to Rogue Squadron.
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, but I'm just saying it, when you're self plagiarism is style. So, you know. Yeah.
Well, you know, there might be something to that. As far as like a connection between Rogue Squadron and Rogue One, other than that, the possibility that Rogue Squadron names themselves after Rogue One and kind of memoriam for the characters who we can assume will be ill-fated. But there is actually a game coming out, just to jump forward a little bit to video games, which is that there's some Battlefront VR coming out, Star Wars Battlefront Rogue One X-Wing VR mission. And aside from it not saying Rogue Squadron and saying Rogue One in there, this is literally putting you in an X-Wing cockpit. And if that's something that's on the mind of anybody, like, we haven't talked about there being X-Wing dogfighting in the Rogue One film. No one has said anything about that exactly. We can assume maybe there will be some.
This could be a prologue mission too, somehow, or, you know.
But here we have something that's branded as Rogue One that is legitimately an X-Wing mission. What it is a battle with a Star Destroyer, ties in every direction with a wingman who you need to keep alive. And it's available for free to all owners of Star Wars Battlefront and the PlayStation VR headset on PS4 when it comes out. And I actually don't know when that is. But
I believe that is next month. I believe it's in October.
Cool. Well, so that's...
Do we know anyone who's has it pre-ordered or...
Well, it's free.
I do.
No, I mean the headset.
Oh.
The headset's
yeah,
not free.
I have the headset pre-ordered.
Ah, nice. Okay.
Well, we expect a full report.
You'll get one.
He won't be here because he'll be playing the game.
He can just virtual conference call his way in.
Skype window it in as he's in his cockpit.
And I will only respond to the call sign Rogue Leader if you guys are going to talk to me through the headset.
Matt, are you choice? Hey, my name. Call signs only, please. Like, and you just hear dogfighting ties in the background.
Yeah, cut chatter Rogue too.
So, we got some details from these action figures. Okay, we can link you to pictures on the episode notes for this episode of Black Series toys. That's the 6-inch Star Wars toys and the regular size 3¾-inch toys in the standard Star Wars format. Some of the expected stuff in the Black Series, we have K2, the robot, the droid, the robot, the Death Trooper, and then the first reveal of the name of a new planet, Captain Cassian Andor, wearing some very warm-looking clothes, and it said that this is the Edu variation. Then in the 3.75-inch figures, we've had a Jyn Erso with an Edu variation, where she's also looking very warm and snuggly. Hmm. So maybe that's the Icelandic wasteland or whatever. We thought that was a flashback when we were evaluating Rogue One shots, but
yeah.
But there might be though. There's basically another biome in this film that we haven't necessarily seen,
other than the beach.
Yeah. Now they said there was a frozen desert, and that might be also what they're talking about. But I don't know. It's kind of been confusing as to like what shots are taking place in what locations,
right?
Because we have a sandy place, and then we have a frosty place, and then there's not any snow, but one of these places is cold, mm-hmm. and then we got the beaches, mm-hmm. and then we got the jungles. So, yeah, there's a lot. There's still a lot of pieces to put together with this film. In the 3.75 figures, there was also something we hadn't seen before at all, which was the Imperial ground crew. We don't know what it is exactly. They're probably just like the guys who wave in starships.
Right.
They come with these batons that could be seen as flight control batons. But these guys, they have these crazy armored helmets, masks, really. They look scary. And in the art on the box, the batons are totally being used in a kind of like defensive baton posture. Like battle batons.
Well, it might just be like an action pose for the box art, you know.
It might be.
Because, you know, flagging down a plane and moving it, like, you know, like with both arms, it's not great to sell an action figure.
You know, maybe the Imperial batons have offensive capabilities as well.
Yeah, maybe. Who, whatever.
But it's a cool looking figure, regardless. There's also released some 2-packs, one including a new character called Moroff, who's a shaggy Yeti looking guy in a mask. His species is a Gygoran, and his description says Moroff seeks out combat zones to sell his brawn and firepower to anyone who might need it. The mighty Gygoran mercenary figures there's money to be made for a towering heavy gunner. And he comes packaged with a Scarif stormtrooper squad leader, and that character's description says specialist stormtroopers stationed on the top secret Imperial military headquarters in Scarif. Shore troopers patrol the beaches and bunkers on the planetary facility. The other action figure 2-pack of note is Pow, the screaming dude from the trailer. He's listed as a rebel commander and comes packaged with a Death Trooper. The details on him is that his species is a Drabata, and his description is an amphibious Drabata. The fierce commando Pow charges into battle with a full-throated battle cry of Sakala, which is what I assume it sounds like. He joins the Rogue One team on its historic mission to secure the Death Star plans.
I cannot wait to hear the descriptions for the Halloween costumes for the cast of Rogue One. Because if they're anything like they were for Force Awakens, they were batshit bonkers and had nothing to do with the film whatsoever.
Like the one that said
I hope they're still using that company. Because those were amazing.
Oh, please, yes. Please.
Yeah, hopefully next week we can report on those. Maybe it's too early, maybe it's not. I don't know.
And we're getting close to Halloween.
I mean, yeah, the costume's already coming out. Disney's already recalled the Maui costume for their Hawaiian princess film that I can't remember the name of.
So, any update on the Zuvio costumes? Any? No?
Rising in market value.
they're super rare now.
In the vehicles, we have a very cool U-Wing figure that comes with Cassian Andor and a TIE Striker. Both of them, which I think is an interesting note, both of them have Nerf. They shoot red or green Nerf darts from them, which is a feature that we also saw on the AT-ACT figure from San Diego Comic-Con, or vehicle from Comic-Con. But like, it's weird that that Nerf is a Nerf firing vehicles are now, that's now a standard thing for Star Wars. It's weird because they're so disproportionate to the rest of the body of the vehicle.
Yeah, but they're fun. Because I mean, I remember when we, because Matt, you and I talked about before, like we had those Action Fleet X-Wing TIE Fighter joysticks that would actually fire the plastic bolts that were actually the proper size. But if you lost those,
Game over, man.
Yeah, game over. Also, if you hit someone in the eye with those would hurt. Like, you know, they would, like, they actually flew pretty far, and they were hard plastic. So they looked great, and they moved great, but if you lost them, that was it, and they would hurt you. But with the foam darts, I mean, it's easy to find, and they're soft. And
what's interesting is that in the photos, maybe it's just good photos, but they actually don't appear to be cumbersomely placed on it. You don't, they're not really noticeable.
And you don't need as good aim to shoot an action figure. And like, knock it over. It has maybe a little bit more oomph to it.
One final note in the action figure front from Rogue One is that there's a 12-inch Interactech Stormtrooper figure. This is a figure that has 65 sound and light effects. And it comes with a jetpack. There's some of the phrases from this thing that have leaked online already. And there's some that you'd expect, because it's a Stormtrooper, there's lots of room for this not being a Rogue One figure specifically. For example, the line, there's one, set for stun. Okay, sure. But here's a couple others that are kind of like, huh? That maybe indicates something from the film. There's one, he has a jetpack and says, let's take this fight to the sky.
Maybe.
There's one that says, aerial attack. And also, head for the canyon, which sounds overly specific.
I mean, you know, growing up, I remember G.I. Joes. There were just generic G.I. Joes that had voice things where you'd hit their backpack with four different buttons and they would say random things like that, like, you know, get down, hit the dirt, you know, open fire, to the left, you know, like it's...
Yes, but...
And if you have one wearing a jetpack, it would make sense. Let's take this battle to the skies. It's like, that's what you'd want to do.
That's true. However, this is not the first time that there's been a talking Star Wars figure that has revealed minute aspects about a plot to the film beforehand. Mm-hmm. We discussed this last year with Force Awakens figures. So,
but those were also main characters saying very specific lines to other specific main characters.
Why the fuck is he talking about a canyon?
Why the fuck not? Like, if it was the same thing, it's just what do you expect him to say? Like, all right, we're gonna take.
I'm just saying, there's a scene with a canyon.
We already seen in the teaser. Yeah, the X-Wings go diving into a canyon. So whatever. Sure.
There are no stormtroopers in that scene, though. I'm talking about another scene with another canyon.
Yeah, because the X-Wings are just flying into an empty canyon where there's other X-Wings that are going to meet and have a picnic.
Well, as soon as I see this thing, I'm going to press its button 65 times, and I'm going to hear every word he has to say.
Tell me your secrets. It's like you're going to interrogate this toy.
And then you're going to be eating Lothrat. One final note about Rogue One. Bob Iger's seen the film. And here, this... Matt's laughing because he knows already. There's a quote that's been republished everywhere. Vanity Fair, or Hollywood Reporter, they do it. I don't know. Maybe not. But it's we haven't been able to find the original source for it. We don't know if we should be reading this exactly as it's written. But if you read the ellipses in this quote, he says it's a spinoff experiment that he called really interesting in terms of storytelling.
Really interesting in terms of dot 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 storytelling.
Cap, I just want to say how much like better ethics you have to actually kind of give the ellipses sort of like disclaimer, because it probably like is being taken out of context for the sake of like that's what I'd like
see,
to believe.
Yeah, well now, all right, you guys are giving him too much credit still. Do you not remember when he was talking about Indiana Jones?
Dude, I know this guy's a toolbox.
I'm just saying, it's like I'm gonna reread you the quote about Indiana Jones 5. There's multiple quotes, but here he goes. Right now, we're focused on a reboot or a continuum, and then some and then a reboot of some sort. Then he goes on to say, we'll bring him back for Indiana Jones 5, and then we'll have to figure out what comes next. That's what I mean. It's not really a reboot. It's a boot. A reboot. I don't know. But what's but then what's the direction? I've had discussions with what the direction is, but I don't want to get into it. So it's like he's not very good at talking to journalists and getting a coherent idea across.
Yes, he is terrible at it. Yes,
it's a good point. Very good point.
So if he's just like, I really liked it in terms of storytelling. Not the storytelling. The storytelling's fine. But, you know, I'm just saying, we know a guy who's working on the script. I mean, the script's written, but, you know, it's like...
In this case, he was not speaking to a journalist. He was at a board meeting.
Whatever. Like, he trips over...
He's a businessman. I assume that he's good at the business part.
Yeah, but he trips over himself all the time, like, when it comes to talking about a story, because he doesn't want to give anything away either. He may have stopped himself short before giving something away. He could have said, it's very interesting in terms of, like, character death. Well, not character death, but, like, questioning... never mind. Fuck it. Storytelling. You know, it's like...
I would love a Bob Iger quote that ends with "fuck it."
I want the Bob Iger action figure with four different buttons that say
"head to the canyon."
You hit one, it says it's a reboot. Second one, it's not a reboot, it's a boot.
I think whenever we read Iger quotes on air from now on, we should just end it with "fuck it." Rogue One's very interesting in terms of storytelling. Fuck it.
Fuck it. I don't know.
One last Rogue One thing. One additional last Rogue One thing is that Rogue One Catalyst by James Luceno is coming out November 15th, and we have a description of it. Here it is. War is tearing the galaxy apart. For years, the Republic and the Separatists have battled across the stars, each building more and more deadly technology in an attempt to win the war. As a member of Chancellor Palpatine's top secret Death Star project, Orson Krennic is determined to develop a superweapon before their enemies can. An old friend of Krennic's, the brilliant scientist Galen Erso, could be the key. Galen's energy-focused research has captured the attention of both Krennic and his foes, making the scientist a crucial pawn in the galactic conflict. But after Krennic rescues Galen, his wife Lyra, and their young daughter Jin from Separatist kidnappers, the Erso family is deeply in Krennic's debt. Krennic then offers Galen an extraordinary opportunity to continue his scientific studies with every resource put utterly at his disposal. While Galen and Lyra believe that his energy research will be used purely in altruistic ways, Krennic has other plans that will finally make the Death Star a reality. Trapped in their benefactor's tightening grasp, the Ersos must untangle Krennic's web of deception to save themselves and the galaxy itself. And hey, that sounded really revealing. I'm sorry, don't shoot the messenger. That's the description of the book. Mm-hmm.
Hey, that's an official blurb. There's no spoiler there. I am more excited about this at this point than the actual movie, to be honest. Because, like, for me, like, James Luceno, like, I mean, he's obsessed with connecting every little piece of Star Wars history in the old expanded universe. And that was why I was so clever to have him write the Tarkin novel, so he could bring in elements and kind of reestablish what was what in this new Disneyverse. And for him to come and say, like, all right, it's been really confusing how, ever since George Lucas decided to have that random hologram of the Death Star over, you know, during the Geonosis sequence in Attack of the Clones, it's gotten real complicated, the Death Star's history. They wrote an entire book about it called Death Star. And it was just, you know, it's all over the place because they had already established that, like, Tarkin was sort of working on it, like, after Phantom Menace and, like, then Tarkin's history got rewritten, and it was got all kinds of confusing. So just like, you know what? James, write us this book that will bring us from Attack of the Clones to Rogue One. And they couldn't have picked a better author to be doing this. And I'm super, super excited about this book.
Yeah. So pre-order it now. Follow our Amazon links to pre-order it. So State of the Empire gets a little bit of kickback for your Star Wars purchases. And, of course, you can always do that at nerdyshow.com/Amazon and bookmark that and make that your only portal for Amazon. Just a little quick plug there. But there's lots of cool Star Wars stuff coming out. And if you buy any of it through Amazon, you should do it through us. Moving on to Han Solo. We got some interesting notes here. One thing we can confirm, Bradford Young is cinematographer. He worked on Ain't Them Body Saints, Selma, and A Most Violent Year. Which is an inspired choice. Someone with an artier background than you might suspect for Han Solo.
Yeah, some good-looking movies.
And a quote, a tweet, actually, from Mashable's Jeff Snyder. He said, "Last I heard, the Han Solo search for a female lead was down to 4 girls, and they weren't white." Which has led many to suspect that the film is actually going to feature Santa Staros, the woman who likes to say that she's Han Solo's wife from the Star Wars comics. Which would be the...
I hope they do her better than they've been doing her character in the comics.
Yeah, she, man, they introduce her and then they do nothing with her.
Nope.
It's been really weird.
Yeah.
I feel like in the Star Wars comics from Marvel, a lot of stuff happens where they introduce a neat idea and then for some reason aren't given or give themselves, the authors themselves, the opportunities to explore that idea at all unless it's a miniseries.
Yep.
It's a weird reoccurring thing.
After flipping through several of these issues, I noticed a reoccurring theme of story is happening. I mean, it's a typical cliffhanger for a comic book to make you want to get the next issue, but it's always like the last page, someone's wrapping up business somewhere, and then a new person walks into the room, and everyone's like, what? And then it's like, tune in next time. So it's like introducing characters. I don't know how you're going to keep up with it. Like, it's a reoccurring thing where they're dropping these plot points. Like the same way when we first saw Sana Solo, it's like she shows up at the end. What? Yeah. And then it never gets picked up. Like,
yeah, makes general news across the internet. Doesn't really go much of anywhere. The hut that collects like all these like Jedi, you know, trinkets and archives and everything else, you know, for the sake of like Luke being able to explore his Jedi roots. Nope. Let's drop that plot from, you know.
Instead, we're left here connecting the dots as to whether Luke went back there, looking at the map in Force Awakens, seeing that he may have gone back there. It's like, we're putting all that together. Well, you could easily make a comic that explains all of that.
And then that character gets picked up again years later in the Poe Dameron comic.
Right.
So there's synergy in it, but it's weird that the stories don't have a normal paced flow when they show off something and then are kind of forced to string along for a while before they can actually make a point. Yeah. Like Sana Solo or Sana Staros should be of some relevance at some point, but maybe, just maybe, if this is true and they actually are casting her character, they were like, shit, Jason Aaron, that's a really good idea. But Lord and Miller found out about that, the directors of Han Solo, and they want to work her in here. So now you're going to have to put that character. She's got to still be in the stories, but you're going to have to like not explore her for a few months while we make sure we tell the parts of her story we want to tell in the movie first, and you don't get to touch those.
Yeah, because maybe, you know, that's a great point. They could have had a plan land out in the comic where they're like, who are you? What's your deal? And then she was like, oh, here's my deal. Han and I, this is how we go back, blah, 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 blah. And now they're like, oh, shit, you can't say it in the comic now because that's going to be in the new movie. So,
and the reason I bring that up at that hypothetical situation is that shit happens all the time in stuff relating to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, for example. So, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen and some shit falls on the floor. Now, last time we talked about Donald Glover being a rumored first pick for Lando in the Han Solo film. And I feel that that's some bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Me too.
I think there's a lot of fan interest in Donald Glover being Lando, and I get it. I liked him in Community. He's like, Childish Gambino is pretty cool. But I also kind of feel like the fan interest in it being Donald Glover, and this is going to sound potentially, there's going to be some conflict about me saying this, but I think that maybe most white nerds don't know enough black actors.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth of the matter is that there are more white people in television and films than there are black people in television and films, because there's just not enough general purpose diversity in casting. And so, of course, Donald Glover's the first person you go to. He's the first person you can name.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of a handful of black actors working in other nerd genre.
Who's age appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's my pick. And this is someone who I've encountered recently. I love him. I think he is. If they can find someone as good as this dude to play Lando, I will applaud them. But I think this guy has got to be the definitive Lando. His name is Shameik Moore, and he's from Dope. And what I've seen him in is The Get Down, the Netflix series, which is exceptional. If you haven't checked it out, I highly recommend it.
He was the main character in Dope.
Was he?
Yes.
Oh.
Matt, you've seen Dope, right?
Oh, he was fantastic in Dope.
Well, and he's Shaolin fantastic in The Get Down, which is character's name.
Yeah, he would be perfect just from a pure acting standpoint of being clearly a very gifted actor. with a lot of on-screen charisma that is an absolute necessity for Lando Calrissian.
Yeah. In The Get Down takes place in 1977, and he's not playing a character where I'm like, oh, he's just channeling Billy Dee Williams there. In fact, he's not at all. But he's, one, an extremely good actor, and two, full of charm, and three, I can tell he can do it. Like, I can imagine this guy selling Colt 45.
Well, the same way when
with the same charm and style. Like, I don't drink, but I kind of want that now.
You're saying this is similar to what you're saying about, what's his name? The guy who's going to be playing the new young Han Solo.
Yeah, Alden Ehrenreich.
Yeah, with Alden Ehrenreich, you said, oh, he wasn't playing a Han Solo ripoff, but you can see how he could play Han Solo differently. He's not just going to be copying Harrison Ford.
Yeah. Yeah, so Shameik Moore, he's my pick. If you can do better than that, I challenge you. As soon as I saw him in The Get Down, I was like, holy crap, I think this is Lando. Hopefully Lord and Miller thinks so too. The movie comes out May 25th, 2018, and I suppose we'll probably find out who Lando is, being, or who's cast as Lando next year. Now we got some quick episode 8 stuff. There was an interview with Adam Driver in Collider, which was interesting. He was talking about the process of working on episode 8. It's a good, long interview, and I'm going to read some excerpts from it right now. He said, I learned a lot of things about my character through Rian Johnson's writing. He was working on the script while we were still working on the first one. To understand what JJ was doing and to take ownership from there is kind of a remarkable thing. And he's the most polite, unassuming guy, and he was appropriately territorial about some things, but would still be first to admit when something's not working. It's similar to how The Empire Strikes Back has a different tone. For that, people always go, ooh, it's dark, but I don't know that it necessarily is. It's just different in tone in a way that I think is great and necessary, but also very clear. He trusts that his audience is ready for nuance and ambiguity. He's not dumbing anything down for someone, and that's really fun to play. The stakes are even higher, I think. No one is relaxing.
Saying all the things I want to hear.
Yeah, yeah, he really is. Here's a little thing that's not a spoiler, I feel. Making Star Wars has reported that a rumor that episode 8 will feature a continuation of the flashback sequence from The Force Awakens.
Hmm.
What's specifically rumored is the sequence involving Rey, Luke Skywalker, R2, Kylo Ren, and dead bodies of youthful characters. They said some documents appear to reveal late adolescent kids have been brought back to play the dead Padawans of Luke Skywalker's Jedi Order. That whole scene was essentially like they made lightsabers for these dead characters. The whole scene was planned out when they filmed it originally for Force Awakens, and that people have been called back to do a new version of that scene.
Huh.
The reason Rey would be in the scene was because she would be herself having a vision in which she's walking through it happening.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. Another Star Wars first, much like picking up a film right after the last one.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I believe it. I think it's possible. Some kind of random stuff that we don't have any clue what it's in reference to exactly. Is it something strange happened on Ray Park's Twitter recently? That's the guy who played Darth Maul. The body of Darth Maul, not the voice of Darth Maul. That's been several people. A fan asked him if he could explain an image from what they presumed was a deleted scene from episode 1 of Obi-Wan and Maul like leaping at each other with lightsabers on Tatooine.
Mm-hmm. I remember this image when they were promoting episode 1.
Park explained that it was a promo shot for Vanity Fair, but then he added, however, it may be a sign of things to come, and then added four winky faces.
I think he may just be teasing everybody. I don't, like, how could that be? That's just hopeful thinking. I don't see how it could be a sign of things to come that they planned all those years ago for a photo shoot for Vanity Fair. He says exactly what it is. It was a photo shoot for Vanity Fair.
Well, not that they would plan from a photo shoot for Vanity Fair, but maybe that Darth Maul is going to return to a live action thing.
But you can't get that from a photo from all those years ago.
Well, no, you wouldn't.
Right.
But it would be like this fan being like, hey, what's up with this? And he's like, well, nothing. But, hey, I know some shit, though.
Eh.
Like, that's how I took it.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
And more fans are taking another leap and being like, shit, Obi-Wan movie confirmed!
Yeah, I'm not ready to say that yet.
Yeah, me neither. Especially not when so much work is being done with Obi-Wan in the Star Wars comics. We've talked about the reoccurring issues of Jason Aaron's series Star Wars, where they've had basically Obi-Wan's journal when he was on Tatooine and showing him kind of taking care of Luke in the shadows. Mm-hmm. And that's seemingly ruled out the possibility of him having a whirlwind adventure during that time. Star Wars issue 26 is actually a story featuring Yoda, Obi-Wan, and Qui-Gon. We don't know in what capacity. So just...
You think that capacity is during the prequel era, or do you think that there's some like communion shit going on between all of their Jedi spirits and whatnot?
I'm hoping it's going to be an all Force Ghost issue of Star Wars.
Well, I mean, not Obi-Wan and Yoda, but I just mean like mention that he's, you know, doing some communing among the dead, well, considering Qui-Gon is supposedly the one teaching the two of them.
Yeah, well, hey, I mean, if Ezra sits down in a Jedi temple on Lothal and all of a sudden Yoda's talking to him, then certainly Obi-Wan was just dialing up Yoda on the Force cell phone, being like, hey, Master, what's shaking?
Yeah. And as I mentioned to you, Cap, I do firmly believe...
Oh, you know, still smells here.
Sorry.
I feel the assumption... First of all, the Rebels has made it seem like Yoda has some hope for Ezra and Kanan and Ahsoka. Because, I mean, he's there to help.
Yeah.
So... Certainly Yoda wants to see them do well. I don't even know if Yoda's convinced that like Luke is the answer. Or maybe he's just trying to preserve them long enough that they become, you know, Luke's future Jedi. Who knows what the plan Yoda has for them, if any. But I think one of the interesting aspects of this comic is the potential to reveal, to give Luke knowledge of Yoda before, you know, because he's reading Obi-Wan's journals and all these Star Wars ongoing comics. Is to let him know that Yoda existed in some way. Maybe not to describe him as, like, you know, a tiny green guy, but, you know, so that he's still surprised when he gets to Dagobah. But I think what's an interesting comment from Empire Strikes Back is when Luke says, I'm looking for a great warrior. And it's like, well, how does he know? I mean, I guess he can assume that he's a great warrior because he was a Jedi Knight, but maybe because Luke has read a story in Obi-Wan's journal that tells him about of this great warrior named Yoda.
Yeah, and that so, makes sense because Obi-Wan's like, go see Yoda. And Luke's like, oh, whoa, okay.
You know, it'll be interesting to see how that changes the dynamic in Empire Strikes Back because, you know, now Luke might be thinking, holy crap, Yoda's alive? Like, I didn't realize that guy that I was reading about, you know, 2 years ago in your journal is still kicking it.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hoping for. I think that would be a cool story.
Yep.
While we're on the topic of comics, a new Star Wars ongoing is coming out in December. They're actually going to get two issues in that month alone. And as Darth Vader is ending, Kieran Gillen is transitioning over to this other Star Wars book. And we have no clue what it is.
Well, I could guess.
Oh, what's your guess?
My guess is it's Dr. Aphra and her two crazy, crazy droids.
Oh, you think so? You think they'd give her an ongoing book?
I think they're convinced that everybody wants to read that ongoing book. I don't think they're bad characters. I just think they think they're more interesting than they actually are.
Yeah. Yeah. They've kind of, they've suffered this.
They're not bad.
They've suffered the same dilution that a lot of the mainstay yes. Star Wars comics have had.
There's a weird sort of like, I feel like they act as if we know enough about them to like them. But in fact, we've been given too little to enjoy them to that level.
I also don't find them that skillful. I feel like half of their good fortune is luck. Like, I've yet to see them do something where I go, oh, that's why the Empire keeps relying on them, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Because they can't be as bad as we're told they are.
Right.
Because they're always put in scenarios with characters that can't die.
Right.
And if they were put in scenarios with characters whose fates we don't know, then maybe some shit would happen.
Right.
But
yeah, I always felt Dark Horse has done so far a much better job, or you know, had done a much better job by this point, of introducing characters that I felt were on an even keel level in the universe to the big three. You know, Luke, Leia, Han. Like, just certainly people that exist alongside them instead of guest star. And I know it's because it's like, there's still Vader's ongoing, and then like, the main three's ongoing series. So everybody's playing secondary to them. But I think that might be the issue, is that they haven't gone out and done original character series yet. It's still mini-series based on existing characters, or it's ongoings based on existing characters.
When you introduce an old girlfriend to Han Solo, suddenly they say, sorry, you can't write that anymore. They're in a movie. And you're like, oh, shit, better play it safe, because every time we come up with something new, they take it away from us.
Yeah, they need to do a series that has nothing to do with the main struggle and let them thrive on their own. And I guess, in a way, that's kind of what Rogue One is. So,
well, I'd say find out at New York Comic Con whether or not Matt's prediction is correct and whether or not it's an Aphra and Droids book.
Could always be Boba Fett.
Could be. I would like to read that book.
Yeah.
The artist on that, by the way, is Kev Walker of Uncanny Inhumans. Now, there's a quote from Ben Sherwood, head of ABC Television, in regards to a live-action Star Wars television series. And it's an interesting quote, so I'm going to read it. It's inconclusive. The Star Wars plans rest at the hands of Walt Disney Studios chairman Alan Horn, Kathleen Kennedy, and the great folks at Lucasfilm. Somewhere, we hope, in a galaxy not too far away, there will be a television show that will air on one of our networks. But I wouldn't get anybody's hopes too high. They have a lot more movies to make between now and then. We're deep into a very productive relationship with Lucasfilm making Star Wars Rebels. And we are ongoing in conversations with them on what the next Star Wars animated show will be. That was actually the first major hint we had to there being a Star Wars animated show. But it happened between the last two episodes. So it's the first you're hearing about it. And then closing out our spoiler-free Star Wars stuff, discussion of video games. For starters, the Death Star DLC is out for Star Wars Battlefront. Of course, we mentioned the VR, the Battlefront VR. But here's something that's that might be a total bummer if you're still playing it. Star Wars Uprising is shutting down. The game, yeah, it's a mobile game. It's a mobile game RPG, and it launched September 2015, and it's shutting down November 17th, 2016. They put up a message that read, "Dear player, despite the best efforts of our team here at Kabam, unfortunately Star Wars Uprising will soon be decommissioned. The servers will be shut down November 17th, 2016. And there's an FAQ, starting with, why is Star Wars Uprising shutting down? They said, while Star Wars Uprising was enjoyed by a great community of players since its launch, the game is no longer achieving the level of success needed to maintain the game, and the decision was made to discontinue support. So they don't have the resources to bother to keep the lights on and continue to provide support for it. So, boom, away it goes. And I actually, you know, I don't love mobile games, and I don't have a lot of time for video games in general these days, unfortunately. So Uprising was not a high priority of mine. I don't even know. It took place. It was the first thing to take place after the original trilogy, and I don't know if they actually did any serious work with building the world of a destabilized, galaxy. I have no idea. Matt, did you dig deep into it at all? Or
not deep, but they did localize a lot of the events within one sector, so it didn't seem indicative of the universe at large or the galaxy.
Yeah.
And kind of Aftermath then came in and kind of, I felt, just basically said, up, all the unrest immediately after Endor, we kind of like, you know, everything's stabilizing now, and we're getting a government together, so don't worry about it. So,
are you guys ready for Indie Inquiry?
Fuck it. I don't know.
All right, guys. So we got no new news on the Indiana Jones film due out July 19th, 2019. But we do have news about a new Indiana Jones project. Completely unofficial, but potentially very, very awesome. There is, on September 29th, as in this very week, a fan film that's an animated fan film. It's been in production for about 5 years, since 2011. It's called The Adventures of Indiana Jones. And it has an interesting point of origin. When Kingdom of the Crystal Skull was coming out, Lucasfilm and Acme Archives commissioned Patrick Schoenemaker, an artist and animator from the Netherlands, to create an art print of Indy as an animated character. He did the print. That was it as far as official stuff goes. But then it lit some kind of spark, and for the past 5 years, he's been developing this. We don't know the length, we don't know the plot, but there's a bunch of concept art online, and I'm super excited to check it out. So we'll be giving a full debriefing on that after we've seen it with the next State of the Empire recording. Something that we have seen in the concept art are, and I don't know if these characters are actually going to appear, but we've seen Short Round, Marcus, and Henry Jones Sr. It would be awesome to see see all those characters interacting together, Short Round and the older Dr. Jones. Yeah, I want that.
I would like to see the dog Indiana. I would like him to play sort of a bat dog type role.
That would be rad.
Or someone just says, someone yells out, Indy! Both Dr. Jones and the dog go, huh? They look over.
Now, we do not have some Willow Watch for you this time. We're going to have Willow Watch for you next time. We're running a little short on time. And we don't really have any Willow news, but we do have some more morsels from the source book. So look forward to that in next week's episode of State of the Empire. Before we open the blast doors, we got some shout-outs we got to give. State of the Empire and all the shows on the Nerdy Show Network are entirely fan-funded. We exist purely because you want us to, and the best way to show that is to help us stay alive via the financial IV drip of your money. It means the world to us, and the best way you can support us is via Patreon. That's patreon.com/nerdyshow or nerdyshow.com/support for all the details and all the different ways you can give to us. But at Patreon, you get all kinds of support perks, including a lot of bonus audio from State of the Empire. Another way you can help us out that doesn't involve money is rating and reviewing our show on iTunes. And we have two recent plugs from fans that I think would be great to read here. We got one called Subscribe to, Listened, and Loved This Podcast by Jay Buzzo. He said, this is, in my opinion, the best Star Wars podcast by the people, for the people. All facets of Star Wars, including movies, TV, novels, games, and expanded universe lore are covered by people that love the galaxy far, far away as much as I do. I know it's going to be a great day when I see a new episode is available. I always listen all the way through, no matter what else needs to be done. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome. Thank you.
thank you, Jay Buzzo. A glowing review. And Shaded Spryder said, keeping Willow alive. Best Star Wars news within 5 parsecs and the only place where you will find in-depth discussion about the future of the classic Willow. Just not this episode. But next episode, though, Oh yeah, it's going to happen. Now it's time to open the blast doors.
Open the blast doors. Open the blast doors.
Should we talk about Rebels first? In regards to owls and their eyes and what that might mean?
Yes, please.
Dave Filoni said some cryptic shit in his interview about the frequently appearing owls and those owls' eyes and what that might mean. And I don't, Matt, I think you have a better perspective on this than I do. I have no clue what he's talking about.
Well, I just know that, I mean, we talked about it last season in the, it wasn't the penultimate episode, it's whatever the third to last, I guess, but you know, it's like the penultimate week because the finale was a two-parter on the same day. But there was that strange sort of like they almost look like Lothcats with wings that landed, and the Imperial theme started to play a little bit. And Ezra gazed off into the stars, and it came a scene after Ahsoka was meditating. And we both said, like, what was going on there? Like, there was something to that. And I watched that scene a couple more times, and first of all, it's just beautifully done. Like, music and like the camera work that they had and everything, it was just really, really pretty, but I still have no idea. I guess they were insinuating that Ezra was going to start leaning dark, but I feel like there's a little bit more going on there. That owl has since made returns to the series. Like, it was featured in the premiere episode with Bendu, and I guess you could see it towards the end of the finale from last season when they returned to Chopper Base.
Yeah, and is it in the Ahsoka art that Dave Filoni did?
Yes, it is in the Ahsoka art.
And it's also on Sabine's new armor.
Yeah, and there's something very, like, obviously something going on there, but so Filoni, like, you know, willingly talked about it in that fantastic interview that he gave about Rebels. And even though at the time I didn't realize that he'd been removed from supervising director to move on to his next project, it's nice that he's still the figurehead for Rebels. And I don't know, it's just kind of... Colin was actually the one who suggested to us that the owl might be embodying someone, that there might actually be like some force spirit, whether that's Yoda or Qui-Gon or something we haven't met yet. I'm beginning to think that it might be the antithesis to the Sith presence that Filoni also talks about in the interview, which was the voice that Ezra hears whenever he opens the Sith holocron, and he also heard in the Sith temple in the finale episode. that Filoni gave some insight, was actually the one who created the weapon featured in the finale, and that died when the Jedi attacked the
Malachor?
Yes.
Now, and that's a weird spot where they could either be taking a character who previously existed in the expanded universe and adding them in, or it could be something, you know, totally new. Like the existence of Malachor, that Malachor is what it is, that's all expanded universe stuff, but we don't know how much of it's true.
Yep. And, I mean, Ahsoka said it right there in the finale. There's always some truth to legends. And so I think they have some lore set up that heavily borrows from things that have been done before. I mean, everything about Malachor has been heavily borrowed from the event that was alluded to in the Knights of the Old Republic series that actually took place on Malachor, which was where Revan and Malak's last stand was. You know, the final battle of that galactic civil war, whatever they were calling it, Jedi civil war, maybe.
Yeah.
So, you know, it'd be interesting to see. I hope Rebels gets a chance to go into that history and give us, like, I mentioned it in my Star Wars Expanded Universe article, is that we have no more foundation, because everything's been wiped away, for what exactly the conflict between Sith and Jedi is. I mean, Darth Maul says it very, very blatantly. At last, we will have our revenge. Revenge for what? And it looks like Rebels may give us the opportunity to find out what that, the origin of that feeling is, that feeling that the Sith need revenge. So yeah. I think the owl is going to play some sort of like opposite approach to that. Will be the Jedi side of that.
Yeah, and all the scenes with Bendu were very fascinating. I don't think we addressed it on the show, but of course Bendu's named after the Jedi Bendu, the original name of the Jedi. And there's also, Bendu mentioned, what were those two other names?
He mentions the Ashla and the Bogan, which were George Lucas's original names for the light side and dark side of the Force.
Right.
And what the Jedi and Sith embody, you know, that's the, you know, one respects one side and the other respects the other side, which was their original origin, was that there was a schism between which one they should be, you know, tapping into.
Yeah,
and so the Bendu, that is the way he still addresses the light side and dark side as Ashla and Bogan. So they're really digging into George's old notes. So it'd be interesting to see where they go with that.
Yeah, lots of potential here. Now let's dig into what's on the horizon of Rebels. The next episode is called "The Holocrons of Fate." The description is: when Maul takes the crew of the Ghost hostage, Ezra and Kanan must pass a trial in order to recover an ancient Sith artifact to save them. That's ominous as hell. Then,
well, I assume the artifact
is a Sith holocron.
Is a holocron?
Yeah, based on the preview, it's tune in next week for Star Wars Rebels, and it shows them looking for the holocron.
I actually did not catch the preview.
Yeah. Well, we only caught part of it. My DVR cut it off. and Doug's seen it more recently than I have. The next episode is the Antilles Extraction. We're kind of finally see that introduction of Wedge. I was hoping it was going to be in the first episode, but episode 3 ain't bad. Sabine goes undercover as a cadet in the Empire's Elite Flight Academy to help free several young pilots who want to defect to the Rebellion. And episode 4, Hera's Heroes. Hera's rebel supply mission to Ryloth becomes personal when she and the Ghost crew brave overwhelming Imperial forces to recover a memento from her ancestral home.
Which I assume will be the return of her father, Cham Syndulla.
Yeah, most likely. And but will he join the rebellion? Like in a serious way? Will he get pulled into the army effectively?
I feel like his days are numbered.
Yeah,
I feel like his story.
You feel that way about everybody.
I know, but I feel like his story going from back to Clone Wars to the book that he was featured in Lords of the Sith to the way he made up with Hera in Rebels. I feel like this is probably the actual torch passing and his torch extinguishing.
You're like, Ahsoka's gonna die, Rex is gonna die, Ezra's gonna die, everyone's gonna die.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
Kanan's gonna die.
Let's talk about the. Matt, you think Captain Rex is going to die?
Yeah, one of the future episodes, like, no description, is just called The Last Battle. And the only two confirmed characters right now, per Wikipedia, is Ezra and Rex. And, you know, Saber
you used to think in Rex are gonna die.
Well,
so I do that every time.
Actually, I mean, this goes back to my predictions last season for the Rebels finale when I thought Ahsoka was gonna die, because the last conversation they had with each other was a complete opposite of their initial conversation, which was about the fact, you know, Ahsoka at Christophsis had told Rex that she outranked him, but then Rex said experience always outranks, you know, like that it's more important than actual rank. And they had the opposite conversation when she left, basically that she was now the experienced one as opposed to him outranking her. And yeah. So I was like, oh, okay, she's going to die. And figure that's their last conversation they're ever going to have together. And that didn't, you know, that may still prove to be true with Ahsoka still missing. But we'll see if Rex is done for in an upcoming episode.
Yeah, I hope you're wrong, but this is a war show. And if it continues to mature, we're going to have to see some casualties of characters we care about.
Yeah, and they got to introduce characters like K2SO.
That's true. Is that confirmed? Do you know something?
No. I have a feeling they're going to start moving Rebels or Rogue One characters into the show in some sort of supportive role pretty soon.
Mm-hmm. We're at least going to see some U-Wings, probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't wait for when the Rogue One crossover actually starts to happen. So we've
well,
got...
I think mentioned General Dodonna at the end of this episode. He was the general that gave the briefing in A New Hope. So, you know...
Yeah.
And, you know, we're getting Wedge, and so the rebellion is forming by the end of the season, the proper Rebel Alliance. What we'll probably get, to be honest, is what we should get anyways, is we should get Ahsoka back to talk to Saw Gerrera and see if she can, like, recruit him into the Alliance, considering part of the Rebels logo, the Alliance's logo, is the Onderon symbol.
Yeah.
So at some point, they have to get them on board, and I think that's going to have to be, like... God, they're connecting everything. Clone Wars.
Who are they going to get to voice Saw Gerrera? The guy who voiced him in Clone Wars? Or are they going to get Forrest Whitaker?
I want Forrest.
I just got to say for a minute, I love the online video of Kylo Ren reacting to the Star Wars Rogue One trailer. And he sees Forrest Whitaker goes, oh, Saw Gerrera. A man to be reckoned with. Many have tried. I look forward to watching you die. When Ezra has the lightsaber and he's aiming it at the Imperial, like, leader of that base or whatever, and he's just like, oh, you got minutes to live. I'm going to cut the power or whatever. And he's just like, you know, like they're having that little standoff. The music they play there almost sounds directly ripped from E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
What?
Oh,
it's an obscure track. I'm going to try and find out exactly it to make sure I'm not crazy, but... I heard part of a weird musical cue.
It might be the same one that I'm
going to go back and re-listen to it and see if I can pinpoint the exact E.T. track that I'm thinking of. Because I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, I've heard that before. And I thought, it feels John Williams-y, Star Wars-y. What is it? But then I'm like, oh, wait a minute. That was an E.T. thing. So I'm going to look into it and I'll let you guys know if that leads anywhere.
That's super weird.
They ought to get the E.T. aliens into Rebels, considering their canon.
Yeah, they were in episode one. Yeah.
So that's it for this episode of State of the Empire, but we got plenty more. We even know some stuff that's going to be behind the blast doors in the next episode. It's going to be fun. So we're gonna get to some stores early. Matt, where are you going for your Rogue Friday?
Well, the Target that I went to last year is not doing midnight, so I will probably go to the Toys R Us in the Ballard area of Seattle. That is probably where I will end up.
And I'm probably doing Target early Friday morning.
Indefinitely.
Any
advice for people out there? Last year, the Disney store, though they weren't open at midnight, the Disney store had all the good stuff for Force Awakens. So definitely the next morning, I would suggest everybody try to hit up the Disney store.
Maybe I should do that instead. Well, jury's still out. Plenty of time for you guys to shoot any notes to us about places we should be looking at. And we'll see you next week. Taking us out, well, I think we played this track before, but it's so appropriate with the return of Grand Admiral Thrawn. How could we not throw down with Adam Warrock's 2013 single, Thrawn? All about the man himself. Thanks so much for listening to State of the Empire. We'll see you in a week. Hey, yo. Everybody talking Jedi, this Sith Lord, that. Huh. Yeah. I'd rather be Grand Admiral. Doing it with class. Yeah, it's like this.
humanoid. You can stare into my red eyes, cause when I speak I hold that tone calm and steady. Sit on the throne and so I wait and bide my time, but I keep the imperial forces there armed and ready. Out in the regions unknown, out there patrolling the zone, I watch the Death Star fall in the shadow of the sanctuary. So when the Emperor fell and Vader did too, then I assumed the weight that I had to carry. Genius tactician and strategist, the baddest in the galaxy, no republic could handle this. Studying the art of my enemies just to better understand, so when they fall I'm like, yeah, I already knew your plans. Nog Rai bodyguards, katana dreadnoughts, cloak the perimeter of Coruscant, so better not try to pronounce my chiss name. Get your tongue tied, and if you speak ill to me I'll have your tongue right. I'm Grand Admiral Thrawn, servant of the Empire with a plan that never fails. So watch your tone when you speak. You got the force, I got the forces, so come and meet your defeat. Every track that I'm on, I'm Grand Admiral Thrawn, servant of the Empire with a plan that never fails. So watch your tone when you speak. You got the force, I got the forces, so come and meet your defeat. Heyo, whatever made the Kessel running like one less parsec than the best could ever try. Lose your mind in the spice mine. My words cut deep and my stare cuts deeper. Sitting there at Mount Tannis with my hands around the chalice. Heyo, forget Talon Carr, just smuggler trash. Lower class. Forget Sabacc, he lost his mind too fast. Forget Mara Jade, got no use for her. I just used my sick tactics, got a noose for her. With a Sparty cylinder and a team of mole miners, I'm the new empire, way beyond those old timers. So when you hear that imperial march, rest in peace Palpatine, it's for your honor we chart. Every course across the star maps, crush the new republic, raise that black flag underneath the setting sun. That's when Rook cut me down at the throne where I sit. Gotta admit, it was really so artistically done. I'm Grand Admiral Thrawn, servant of the Empire with a plan that never fails. So watch your tone when you speak. You got the force, I got the forces, so come and meet your defeat. Every track that I'm on, I'm Grand Admiral Thrawn, servant of the Empire with a plan that never fails. So watch your tone when you speak. You got the force, I got the forces, so come and meet your defeat.
Thanks for listening to State of the Empire. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream on Google Play. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com and be sure to follow Nerdy Show on all your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.
Do you guys know what the Sarlacc's favorite pasta is?
Mm-mm.
Fettuccine.
Fuck. God, these are getting worse. How is that even possible? Hey, fellas, your astromech's hungry?
No, BB-8. Do you know what a Jawa's favorite vegetable is?
Zucchini!
Ha! You got it! Right on the money.